On the Bechdelcast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdelcast.
Hello and welcome to the Bechdelcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Durante.
I'm your other host, Jamie Loftus.
And we have a podcast about the portrayal of women in movies.
It's not this one. It's a different one.
It's a different one.
We're starting off hot.
Yeah, we're doing, oh, man.
Coming in hot.
Hot today.
I kept telling myself I'm going to stop calling myself the other host.
Yeah.
But I'm othering myself, you know?
I just try to.
It's not your fault. It's my fault.
Yeah.
It's a self-esteem thing.
Don't.
No, but I keep casting myself as the B character in my own story. It's like, Jamie, what are you doing?
Yeah, don't do that. You're like who's a star?
I can't who's a star?
Remember a single a star? Movie star.
I'm Natalie Portman. I'm not Mila Kunis.
Right.
That dirty... Okay, this is the
Bechdelcast.
We love women. This is what happens when our guests are late. I hit the mics hard, too hard, before we start, and then the opening is a disaster. Normally, I'm very together for the opening, and then it goes down.
And then it, yeah. Let's just intro our guest, then.
Okay.
He is a writer for SpongeBob SquarePants.
Hey, cool.
And he is with the Democratic Socialists of America, the Los Angeles chapter.
Interesting juxtaposition.
Mm-hmm. Josh Androsky.
Hello. I'd also like to point out I was a writer for SpongeBob SquarePants. I did nothing I say currently reflects the values of the Nickelodeon Corporation.
I see.
Like, look, whoa. Come. See? Couldn't say that.
You gotta sneak it in.
Yeah, no, we did.
You gotta sneak it in.
We snuck in a lot of socialism into that show, too.
Okay, socialism and cum.
We're off the bat, let's talk gender roles, because I kept trying to get Breitbart and InfoWars and shit to get mad at me for calling Barron Trump a waterhead, but they only got mad at women that did it. Right?
Isn't that just the way?
Huh.
It's just the way.
It's almost as if it's not at all about the thing. It's just about men that aren't okay with powerful women. Wow.
That's a lot.
That's crazy when you think about it.
I would like to reallocate some things that people are mad at me about and give them to you.
I could take them, dude.
Yeah.
What do I do all day? I got a boogie board.
Yeah.
Put it on my boogie board. Unpack and put it onto my boogie board.
Wow, what a great transition to the movie we're talking about.
Oh, shit.
Oh, I thought that was on purpose.
No, I just love boogie boards.
Wow.
Who uses the word boogie with any regularity?
Hello.
Let's take the transition. Let's ride that wave.
Yeah.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. I know.
Let's see how many bad puns we can squeeze into this episode.
I mean, this is a good.
That's
fuck.
A good.
Fuck, it's sex. Fuck.
Yeah, it's
squeeze.
A sex movie.
It's a fuck. Sweet. It's a fuck squeeze.
That's, I think, the official genre of this movie.
Fuck squeeze.
Paul Thomas Anderson. Fuck squeeze.
Hell
anyway,
yeah.
If you haven't guessed,
the heart eight
or. The movie is Boogie Nights. Written and directed by Paul Thomas Anderson.
And all his high school friends, if you want to believe some of the stories.
Oh, I haven't heard those stories.
That he stole the whole movie. He made it with his friends and then was like, bye, and then like made it himself. But just, you know, typical man.
I would like to say right off the top, I don't trust three names. I never have trusted three names. I never will trust three names. I enjoy this film. I perhaps enjoy this three names creative output.
Sure.
But I would never trust him with my life.
A lot of the cast of the movie has three names because you've got...
Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Yep.
Michael Clark Duncan.
Marky Mark Wahlberg. That's three names. Well, if you count someone using their middle initial as a third name, you've got your John C. Reilly's, your William H. Macy's.
Oh, wow.
And you've got Philip Seymour Hoffman.
I'm exhausted.
Julie Ann Moore.
Right.
Heather, vroom, vroom, Graham. That's and four.
Something I'll be bringing up a lot in this particular episode is, guess who doesn't have three names? Alfred Molina.
Daddy.
Just a bunch of syllables, but only two names.
I love him in this movie. I also am 100% just going to gently flick my bean to all his scenes in Feud tonight.
So, Josh, when did you first see the movie?
I saw this movie as part of like that like awakening that you have when you're like 14 and you're like, I'm an adult. Where you're just like, these movies define me and everything I'll talk about for the next 6 years.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I was like 14 or 15 and I saw it. When he says Dirk Diggler and the sign comes on and like it explodes and it's so big, like that was what the movie did to my brain.
Wow.
Yeah.
The sign comes.
This, yeah. Basically.
My head jizzed.
I saw it again around the same age. I might have been a little older. I think I was 16. I just knew it was one of those movies that was very iconic. And I was like, I got to watch this if I'm going to be a film major at Penn State. So I saw it when I was in high school to prepare for all the, you know, movies I would need to know about.
And much like Penn State, this movie also features a prominent old white pedophile.
Yes.
Oh, it's sad when he cries, though.
Oh, it is.
It is.
You're my friend.
Yeah.
Say that you're my friend.
No.
And then the scene that I didn't remember when he's like in jail and he's like getting beaten up by his cellmate. I didn't remember that scene.
Oh, the beat up montage where three of the main characters get walloped.
Yeah, I saw it for the first time then. And then I didn't watch it again until maybe a few months ago. I was like, oh, I got to see this movie again. It's been a very long time. And then I rewatched it twice, as I always do in preparation for every episode. Because I care too much.
It's hard when you set a bar, you know?
Man, it's not a good
Because then I've
got
to get 50% of the way there, and I'm challenged by that.
When had you seen it first?
I saw maybe a half hour of it in high school when my dad used to do this really funny thing where after we fall asleep, he would watch the Sundance Channel because we couldn't afford the, what are the sexy channels? We couldn't afford those.
Oh, like the premium, like HBO?
Spice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So my dad would seek out titties on the Sundance Channel at night. And one
Hold
night.
On. I'm sorry. No, I have to. We need to give that a moment. Just the last thing you just said, you just have to say it one more time. And I'm really sorry to interrupt.
Okay, okay. My dad would seek out titties on the Sundance Channel.
Thank you.
At night. And then sometimes I would be like, I can't sleep. I'm going to go down and hang out with my dad. And one time he was watching Boogie Nights. And before he realized all the disgusting things were about to happen, he's like, yeah, this is my favorite movie. Mm-hmm. And then I watched it for like 14 minutes. And we saw all these. It was the scene with Julianne Moore's like sweet little pink nip. And I was like, all right, this is where I'm going to tap out and go upstairs. And he kept watching. And then I watched it. It took me like 10 years to sleep that off, but I watched it again and I like it.
One of the first times I saw Titanic after it had come out on VHS, I was watching it in my living room and my dad came in and it was like the nude drawing scene and he didn't walk away. So we were just sitting there. And I think it was also in that same moment that I asked him what foreplay was, because I legitimately had no idea what that word meant.
No.
And he stuttered and stumbled and then walked away. And I was like, okay, well, at least I got what I wanted in terms of him not being in the room with me during this sex scene.
How old were you? 27.
I must have been like 12.
Okay.
I had heard the word and I was like, I don't know what that means. And so I just thought it was a very innocent question.
Right. Because you knew what fingering was when you were 12.
I think so.
Everybody knows what fingering is.
No.
Come on. Do you know what it is now?
No.
It's like, okay, imagine your body is a banjo.
I'm going to start a Twitter poll. I'll figure it out. No, I didn't. Well, I think maybe we've talked about that. I didn't know what any sex things were until they were happening to me. As an in real time learner. Mm-hmm. I told you how. Yeah, I did, because the guy I was talking about texted me and was like, hey, why did you say that?
The guy who you thought invented oral sex on women?
Yeah, and I thought he was a pervert.
Yeah.
How dare you?
I thought he listens to the podcast?
He's a bit, shout out to Steven, who I thought invented oral sex at some point. Anyways, we're still tight. What is the movie we're talking about?
It's Boogie Nights. Let me give you the famous Caitlin's recap or whatever it's called. This movie, it's like an ensemble cast, but the focus is a character named Dirk Diggler, played by Mark Wahlberg. And he is a 17-year-old kid working at a nightclub. He sort of gets scouted by this adult filmmaker. he's both an adult and he makes adult films, just in case you were confused.
Well, because one adult makes child films, right. That's revealed later, so that is a good distinction.
It is. It yeah, films for and by children. It's like Kids Bop.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Jack Horner, right?
Yes.
Jack Horner. And he's like, hey, you should work with me. And he's like, okay. And then they see his dick and it's huge. And they're like, oh, yeah, we definitely want to work.
We got to employ this hog.
When did the word hog come into the vernacular? Because I was waiting for there to be a line in this movie that was like, sweet hog, you know, and it never came.
I don't know when that happened.
I feel like it was a different scene, like a different social scene. I feel like there were people at Altamont talking about hogs. There had to be.
I feel like that was, you know, the 70s is where the phrase hog would
maybe
thrive.
Like maybe like a Ken Kesey, like, you know, Portland bikers. It's like, you know, like, oh, I don't want to call it a cork. I don't want to call it a crank. There's got to be something that's softer, but gets the point across. And then
what about a large farm animal?
All right, I'm narrow it down.
Okay, big goat.
No, heifer.
No, that implies female.
Yeah, right.
Horse.
No, close.
Pony.
Nope. Wait, back. You were closer with horse, but just
miniature
with the name.
Miniature horse, but horse. Big.
Hig.
Okay, we're so close.
Okay, wait. There's got to be another vowel we can put in here. Hug.
All right, guys, I know I've said this a lot today, but we're the next one we say, I think we're going to do it. And by the way, we're all bikers and we're all out of our minds on speed right now.
Right. Okay, one, two, three.
Hog. I think we got it.
We did it. Great hogs, everybody. We've all had our hogs out this entire time.
Yep. I'm a great, bright, beautiful, shining star.
Hey, to all the perverts listening right now, hope your hogs have been out. Because we expect that of you.
Hogs out, baby.
Hogs out. Welcome to the Bechdel cast.
Yes. Right.
You gotta start that. Wait, do you have a catchphrase yet for your podcast?
Grow up.
Right. Well, now you got another one, and it's hogs out. It's the Bechdel cast.
Hogs out. Grow up.
The rest of the story.
The summary.
Who cares?
I know. Basically, he's like, my name's Dirk now, not Eddie, and I'm going to make these adult films. And he, like, rises to superstardom in the porn industry, and everyone loves him and his huge dick. And then he starts doing a bunch of coke, and he has, like, everyone has sort of, like, this fall from grace.
At the end of the 70s, and the starting of the 80s, it all goes to shit.
Right, exactly.
Literally, moment one of 1980 is when it all goes to shit.
And then there's all these secondary characters that each have their own subplot. Reed Rothschild.
A.K.A. Chest Rockwell.
Right. Yeah.
A.K.A. John C. Reilly.
A.K.A. Young Han Solo.
Not to objectify John C. Reilly, but I'm going to go for it. It is so weird to see John C. Reilly with like a tight little bod and the same hairline as he has today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From the head up, he's current John C. Reilly. And then from the neck down, he's like a babe.
Mm-hmm. It's confusing.
Yes.
He's got a subplot where he, you know, wants to be a magician. Mm-hmm. And
God. That just like hits really close to home for me in a way that makes me want to flip a table.
Why? Why is it hit?
Because I feel like I'm drawn to people who secretly want to be magicians.
Oh.
And it's just a vile habit, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was at a bar in college at, again, Penn State.
Oh.
And whoop, whoop, whoop.
Those are the sirens.
Right.
Those are the police coming.
This guy was doing card tricks, and then his friend was doing, like, mentalism stuff.
No.
And I was so... Oh, I love magic. So I was like, oh, my God, I love this. You guys want to go? I asked neither of them in particular. I just sort of posed the question at both of them, and I said, do you want to go on a date? And because they weren't sure who the question was directed at, they both showed up. So I went on a, like... three-way date with these guys.
Two magicians.
Yeah.
One magician and a mentalist.
Yeah, one magician, one mentalist.
Are you sure this wasn't a nightmare you had?
This was real life.
Or an episode of Solomon King's Red Shoe Diaries.
Oh, no.
I mean, it was fun. They did magic tricks the whole time.
No, they didn't.
They did.
No, they didn't.
And then
did they pull anything out of their hats?
They pulled their hogs out.
They pull out their hogs?
From their hats?
Hogs out.
Did they both pull their hogs out?
No, that didn't happen.
Oh, I was like, oh, this is a wild story. I love it.
I'm like going to make my penis disappear.
And then it just recedes into his body.
It comes out the other guy's mouth.
Wow. I would want to see that trick.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, love a good trick. I took clowning classes once.
Oh, boy.
For love. I found my inner clown and...
Wait, was this different from the puppeteering classes you took? No. Different thing? Different God, Jamie.
Different thing. This is around the same time, probably the same calendar year. Troubling year for me, maybe.
Yes.
But I took the puppet classes, and then amazingly, the puppeteer who was 10 years older than me never fell in love with me, mm-hmm. who lived in the attic of the puppet theater.
Right.
So then I was like, all right, let's be mature. Let's move on.
Hold on.
Then,
is this like a Phantom of the Puppera situation? Was he disfigured? Did he use his puppets to talk because
he
couldn't
me.
See your face?
Oh. It's not Phantom of the Opera if he doesn't give a fuck about you. That's no fun. And it's just a guy who lives in a dank place.
With a weird face.
With a weird face and a lot of puppets. And then I was like, all right, now I have a crush on a clown. And I took his clown class. And gang, I was the star of the class. I was teacher's pet at the clown class. And then I never saw him again.
Huh.
What movie were we talking about?
Who knows?
There's a lot of carnival music in Boogie Nights.
There is.
Just saying.
There
Michael
is.
Penn's score. Very good. Mm. I believe it was Michael Penn that scored it. And there's a lot of carnival music in it. So this all checks out.
I was listening to ELO on the way over.
Hell yeah.
Love ELO.
I'm almost at the end of the recap, which has maybe been my worst one yet. But
right.
I don't know. You almost fucked two magicians in the middle of it. So I feel like it's been the best one.
So everyone has had sort of their fall from grace. Dirk Diggler's like jerking off in front of people for money, and then they don't even pay him. They beat the shit out of him instead. Things like that happen.
Two trucks full of people beat him up.
Yeah. And then everyone realizes, oh, maybe I should stop doing so much coke and, like, maybe get my life back on track. And then, you know, some GEDs are taken and people who need help ask for help. And then everyone sort of has a little kind of comeback. And that's the
end
of the movie.
I was surprised at how pleasant the end of this movie is.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it's
everyone does
oddly uplifting.
Does all right.
Yeah.
William H. Macy is truly sort of the only victim of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, and all those guys who got shot. That covered Don Cheadle in blood.
Right.
But that led to him and his wife, the truly the only two innocent, nice, good, perfect people, other than Scotty. But Scotty is the sin of the he's too covetous. Mm. But like truly the only pure people in the movie are Don Cheadle and I forget the actress's name who plays.
He marries Jesse St. Vincent?
Yes. Who I believe was played by an actual... adult actress, maybe?
Oh.
I think so. I'm not sure.
Okay, R.I.P. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh.
But this is like peak Philip Seymour Hoffman, where the
peak.
Whole movie he's like, what? Why you don't love me?
Mm.
I'm fucking
so
idiot.
Nice. I'm
that's
dumb.
Idiot.
Like,
fucking idiot.
Here's my message to Philip Seymour Hoffman's ghost. Grow up.
Here's my message to Philip Seymour Hoffman's ghost. Can I kiss you right now?
Oh, can I kiss you on the mouth?
Can
please let me.
Mouth?
That's how I
Why
hit on men.
Why specify on the mouth?
Please let me kiss you on the mouth.
I found it so disturbing that he's like, on the mouth?
That is one of many very hard scenes to watch in this movie.
Yes.
The scene, the other one that's especially hard is whenever... Roller Girl is in the limo.
Oh.
Jack Horner, and they pick up that guy who she went to high school with and like slut shamed her.
Yeah.
In the middle of an exam, and then that's when she's like, "I'm not going to be in high school anymore."
Yeah.
She rolls out of the classroom. But yeah, that scene
super
where...
empowering. That's completely flipped. Like the empowerment of that slut shame, but also I think led her back to go finish her. So it's like a weird circular thing for a woman who wears wheels all the time.
Oh wow!
Well, she's bound to go in circles.
Yeah.
What the puns are coming back.
She don't take her roller skates off to have sex. That's cool.
I got a brand new pair.
Yeah.
I love how they fucked to that song.
Yep. Me too.
In front of Burt Reynolds.
Yep. Me too.
I have a dream.
The end of that scene, though, after they get it out of the limo and then they beat the shit out of that guy and then she like stomps him on the face with her roller skates.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I was like, you know what? Good for her. I usually don't condone violence, but
hell,
stomp that guy in the face.
This is the, I like Roller Girl.
And she is part of this movie. I was, you know, as a cis-het white straight male.
Please leave. Please leave.
We're triggered.
I don't fucking watch I don't watch movies like looking for the Bechdel test. You know, it's just not a thing that I think of. But this movie passed it within the first 5 minutes.
There is a like that very.
With
we'll talk
Girl.
About this toward the end of the thing.
Is that
so
what you
quit
do?
Stomping on our faces with your roller skates.
Sorry.
Whoa, that's a good one.
Thanks. Yeah, we'll get to that. But
I have never listened to the podcast, and I showed up 25 minutes late. So
typical.
All fucked up on
hetero.
My
Twitter.
Was that?
Disaster.
Was that?
Oh my God.
My wife. What is this about the podcast? Because groovy baby.
I'm gonna. You ever have that like thought where you're just like, what if I just hit my head so hard in the table I passed out? Sometimes that's like a lot of first date thoughts I've had.
No,
this is a fun one. Okay, so like if you're at dinner with someone, or you know, at a Denny's perhaps, and you know,
you go on first dates at a Denny's.
I insist.
Okay.
But anyways, like if you're and you're having a bad time and you're like, I hate this person. Do you ever think about like taking the knife and just chopping your hand off just to like get them to stop talking? Because then they'd be like, ugh.
Wait, speaking of like horrible first dates, I'm going to tell a very quick story that's also very relevant to the movie we're talking about. So I went on a first date in New York City with a guy who turned
New York City.
The city where dreams go true.
Mm-hmm. Concrete jungle where dreams are made of.
So you were walking here with this guy.
There's nothing you can't do.
Okay. Grow up.
So you were on your way to a big and a pizza pie.
And I was like, hey, I'm walking here.
Yeah.
I went on a date. We had nothing in common. He was very, very boring. We did briefly talk about what he did for a living, which was he's like, and I'm an actor and a model. Oof. And I was cool. What have you been in that I've seen? I don't know.
He sounds pretty.
It was a Match.com. He was pretty, which will come into the story later. I met him on Match.com, but like I left the date earlier. It was so miserable that I was like, I can't even. I was there for like an hour, and then I was like, I'm going to go home and never talk to you again.
Yeah.
Fast forward to a year later, I was living in central Pennsylvania, and I got a job as an assistant to a talent scout who scouted for men to be in jerk-off videos for gay porn websites.
I think I know where this is going, and I'm so excited.
This is how you guys met originally.
Yeah.
Yeah, the two of us.
I scouted you.
Yeah.
It's wild. I love this story.
First, my name was Beefy Beaver, and then I've lost some weight, and I'm Oopsie Otter, and so it's fun. It's fun. We're having fun.
Okay, so we were having a hard time finding people, and I was like, "Hey, I went on a date with this guy who was like very good looking, like the type of guy we were looking for. They wanted like very chiseled,
Abercrombie,
buff, exactly." And he,
I know, I've frequented.
And he fit the description. So I was like, why don't we like email him and just see? Because he said he was an actor and a model. He might be willing to do this type of work. Who knows? So I still had his phone number, and we Googled it to see if like an email address would pop up. It didn't. But what did pop up was like 12 profiles advertising him as a gay for pay male escort.
I guess the Lord must be in New York City.
So I had gone on a date with what turned out to have been a male prostitute.
Yep.
So we emailed him, or we found there was like a contact page on one of his profiles.
It was Midnight Cowboy at This Is Not a Movie, Jizz.
He never wrote back, though. And I was like, well, why wouldn't you do this stuff already?
Yeah, maybe he does it for the love of the game.
Oh, maybe. Well, why didn't he do it pro bono then? Or
I had a gun pointed at you.
You thought I was
going to
say boner.
Bona?
Hey, should we talk about the movie?
Sure.
No. Okay.
It is like my favorite movie. If I had to pick.
How many times do you think you've seen it?
Oh, God. Countless. I mean, like start to finish, not doing anything but watching the movie, probably like 20. Yeah. Uh-huh.
This movie is, at least for me, going to be kind of tricky to talk about. in this context because the porn industry has historically been based on objectifying people.
Especially women.
So a movie about this industry is like maybe not going to portray women in the best light if they're like depicting it accurately. But also like this movie doesn't do a terrible job, and they do acknowledge there are different points in the story where like Dirk Diggler is like, I don't want to see women treated that way.
Yeah.
And, right. And there's a scene when he's about to have his first sex scene with Amber, a.k.a.
Julianne Moore. Pink nips.
And they're like, okay, here's what you're going to do. And he's like, well, do we just go like right into the sex? And he's like, yeah. And then he turns to Amber. He's like, are you okay with that? Like, so he's
making
sure everything that's about to happen is something that she's consenting to. So, you know, that was interesting to see on screen.
Mm-hmm. And also like not a big deal. Like it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't one of those things where it's like, we're going to talk about consent, but like very quietly throughout, like you could root for Mark Wahlberg because the entire time he was like, very, I feel like, consenting and wasn't the monster that you would expect somebody that was on that much cocaine and in a porn industry to be.
Right. In fact, not a lot of the characters were as villainous as you might think, considering the industry that they were working in. Although, there is that part whenever, like, I think Amber's making a documentary about porn, or specifically her colleagues, and she's like, well, what about the violence that's happening toward women in these movies? And she's speaking specifically about the Brocklanders series, and Dirk's just like, well, like, whatever, that's just what the movie is. Like, that's my character, that's not me. And then Reed Rothschild says something similar. He's like, well, if, you know, if movies cause violence, then we could just eliminate violence altogether by getting rid of movies. And it's like,
I feel like that at least is portrayed as like
comedy.
They're stupid.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. It was played for comedy. That was one of the dumbest moments they had. It was like that, and then when they recorded their song, were like their two funniest, stupidest moments, like as friends.
That was another scene that was so hard to watch because they were so bad at music, and Dirk Diggler is the worst singer.
It was so funny.
And then they were like, we made gold here. If we could just get our tapes, we could have a record deal. And give us our tapes.
Because that's everyone we know.
Delusion. I live for delusion.
We will rock you. We will roll you.
Like a little kitten.
The tone of this movie is very interesting because it goes from like having quite a bit of comic relief to that whole sequence where like everyone is like they've totally fucked their lives up. And it starts with William H. Macy shooting his wife and her lover and then himself.
Yeah.
And then that just becomes this whole sequence where everyone is a disaster. They're all like coke addled and they're jerking off for $10 in front of people. And,
which
like,
they were in doing at the beginning as well. It was a fun full circle moment.
Yeah.
When he's jerking off for $10 again. We'll all get back there.
Sure. But like
one
this,
day we can hope.
So I give myself 3 weeks.
In this sequence, it's so tragic. And people are getting the shit beat out of them and stuff. But so that the tone kind of shifts, but then it shifts back again toward like the end of the movie where they're all like, hey, it's all right. I took my GED and I get to be in a porn movie again and I'm going to show my dick because I'm Dirk Diggler and I'm cool. But there's a bunch of like running jokes where one is when William H. Macy keeps walking in on his wife fucking some other dude. And he's like, what the hell are you doing? And she's just like, get out of here.
Yeah.
You're embarrassing me.
Well, and that has one of my favorite lines. One of my favorite lines of the movie, which is actually a fuck up that they kept in, where William H. Macy goes up to Ricky Jay, the magician.
Yeah.
The IRL magician who was in this movie, and he goes, my wife has an ass in her cock in the driveway.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's not, and he's just so flustered that he says ass in her cock. And that was a fuck up, but they kept it in because Paul Thomas Anderson just loved how legit flustered little Bill was in that scene.
I caught that and I wrote it down. I was like, that is funny.
Yeah. Yes. Total fuck up by William H. Macy. Not planned.
Oh man.
What a fuck up.
Yeah.
He's on notice with us.
That running joke is like such a classic example of like the rule of three, and it's heightened each time. And then at the very end, like how much more can you heighten it besides like
murder, suicide?
Exactly. Yeah. But like up until then, it was like a really funny running gag. And
But it also, it spoke to the power that women had over men in this movie. And that's something that I really tried to watch it, like, really focusing on the women in this movie. Because usually I'm a Reed Rothschild. That's how I watch the movie. I watch it from his perspective, like, when I was, like, a teen. I just, like, the John C. Reilly. And then trying not to be the Philip Seymour Hoffman. But I watched how the women affected the men and how they interacted with each other a lot. And women had the power almost throughout the entire movie, except for when the shit hit, like, really hit the skids, was when, like, there weren't that as much, like, women in charge. Like, the whole reason that this happened was because Marky Mark's mom is the most powerful woman in that family. Yeah. You know, like, if you're talking about, like, pure power dynamics.
Cuck dad.
Cuck dad. And then, like, wanted to fuck her son, maybe? It was weird. Like, there was a weird moment in the beginning.
Yeah.
When he shoves her against the wall.
I was like, are they gonna kiss?
Yeah.
Please kiss.
I did not interpret it that way at all.
You didn't feel it?
Oh, I felt it.
Maybe we're just horny for mommies.
Yeah.
No, but that, I mean, that was interesting because it's like, you know, the movie's already so long, there was no time to explain why the family dynamic was that way, per se. But it was so, like, it heightened so quickly and so intensely. I guess that's, like, one of the female characters where I was like, why is that? You know, like, why is that the dynamic here?
It's I never, understood like, really explained. Why they did it for, like, narrative reasons, because she's basically the catalyst that gets him to be like, okay, I'm going to choose this path of being a porn
and
actor.
I need a daddy.
Right.
Yeah.
Also,
a mommy and a daddy.
Right. He gets a strong woman and nothing from
his dad. Yeah, so basically Amber ends up being his, like, mother figure, and then Jack Horner ends up being his, like, father figure, and so it was kind of upsetting to see his mom, his actual mom, being such, like, a shrew and just such an awful person. But, I mean, that's how some people are. So, you know, I guess it makes sense.
And the dad was portrayed just as shitty. You know,
daddy.
Like,
He, like, had no idea how to connect with his son at all.
Or his wife. Or his wife. World. Like, you could just tell this guy was, like, it was one of those things where he just, like, is staring out of a window and then the scenery behind him changes.
There's
but nothing
an entire Coen Brothers movie about that dad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a spin-off movie.
Cuck dad.
Cuck daddy.
Cuck daddy.
So, Josh, your point about, like, women kind of being the most powerful force of the movie, I agree and I disagree. I do like how anytime there's a sex scene, it's often, like, on the women's terms, and they're, like, calling the shots, and they're saying, like, don't come inside me. I never take my roller skates off, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of, like, the actual narrative and the portrayal of their stories, like, so every single character or every, like, main character has their own subplot where they have, like, an individual desire, something they're pursuing. So you've got, like, Don Cheadle wants to open a stereo store.
Right.
John C. Reilly wants to be a magician, and he's, like, a musician and a poet and stuff like that.
That poem. You and
me.
Oh,
my God.
You and me sitting under the sugar tree. The sugar tree is full of bees, but the bees don't sting.
Oh, it was, yeah. So you have these different male characters who have, like, these pretty strong desires, whereas the women, in particular, Roller Girl and Amber, they kind of have, their subplots are just either, like, not as clearly defined, or if they do have, like, a distinct desire, they're not pursuing it that ambitiously or nearly as ambitiously as the men are. So, like, Amber's character, she has a son. I mean, feel free to disagree with me. Yeah. But she has a son, and she is trying to, like, pursue getting him back, and it doesn't work out for her. But I don't know. It didn't strike me as, like, being as strong or as a prominent part of the story as these other, like, male subplots were. And then same thing with Roller Girl. To me, she's just, you know, doing the movies. She wants to go back and get her GED eventually. That's something that's revealed because she drops out of high school.
Right.
But she doesn't really have a definitive desire that's, like, carrying her subplot.
I kind of disagree with that.
Really?
I think that they, you know, we could argue that both these characters have clearly defined goals, but they're just not as successful at achieving them. And I think that is, like, probably part of why this movie reflects this industry and all this stuff, where, you know, for the guys, I feel like it pans out in a more black and white way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that with Amber, she wants her son. And then we see with the documentary she makes that she also sort of has higher aspirations than just being, like,
That's true.
A woman in porn, and neither of those really pan out for her. But I feel like there is like an aspiration for something more. And you're right that it's a little bit less defined. But and then Roller Girl with her GED also, you know, like lots of roadblocks. But I don't know. I did think that for sure every character's subplot was clearly defined. And just for the female characters, it didn't tend to work out as black and white.
I would also say that both of their most intense desires were freedom, like the freedom to do what they want as women. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that that was like really the crux of Amber's thing, was she liked to party and fuck and be the mother of all of these people who are already old enough to agree with her and want to do. But then she wanted her son, like she wanted to have it both ways. And like it's the 70s, you know, like, and same with like Roller Girl. Like you saw her in school, like she was trying hard to like figure it out, and then like the dudes at the school were fucking assholes, and so she wanted the free, she doesn't take off her skates, she gets what she wants, you know, in her way. Mm-hmm. I think it's a lot of it is a commentary on society, like that time, and how hard it is for a woman to even be able to come up with a distinct desire in this world.
Yeah,
you know, like you're not useful in the 70s if you're a woman, like to capitalism, to industry, to whatever, you know, you would have to fight so much fucking harder. And so I think a lot of this was like the, you know, last remnants of free love trying to like get freedom.
It also could be that the men's characters' desires are more outward and the women's characters' mm-hmm. desires were more like yeah. internal.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point, though, because I think that you could probably find a moment where every male main or sub character clearly states what they want, maybe with mm-hmm. the exception of Philip Seymour Hoffman, because
I want to kiss you on the mouth.
I want to kiss you on the mouth.
He actually
right
does. He says,
right
"I want to kiss." But we don't really hear those sort of mission statements made by the female characters, which right. is maybe why it's less clear. Or if we do, you know, we could sort of argue that Roller Girl sort of makes that mission statement in that scene where she's talking to Amber. But that's
I want you to
just,
be my mom.
Yeah, like, but that's just them, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. it's like never stated to a male character.
Yeah, and that, well, that's also when she's like, I'm going to go back and get my GED.
Yeah.
yeah.
And take a pottery class.
But we don't learn that about her until that's toward the end of the movie.
Yeah, that's
but
like does, an hour
but
and a half
did in. She know that about her?
Maybe not until that point.
Right.
Is that what you mean?
Like, yeah.
Maybe she
like that was like
to...
a moment of like clarity for her.
Mm-hmm.
She is kicked around for quite a bit of the movie before we know what she actually wants.
We also have to remember that she's very young and
yeah.
like.
But the same thing, seduced into this world, just like Eddie from Torrance.
Right.
you know.
But yeah, I mean, this is why this movie is like, it's very complex. So it's like kind of difficult to, at least for me to discuss.
It's also very
in this context.
Long.
Yeah.
Very
I had
long.
To take a walk.
It's 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, that exceeds my attention span, but I did my best.
Wait, you've seen it countless times.
Countless.
So you spent like days worth of time.
Probably at
this
least
movie.
2 days of my life yeah. has been watching Boogie Nights, and I love it.
I mean, Titanic is 3.5 hours long. I've probably
oh,
seen
I've
it
spent
50
days
times.
Watching
yeah,
Titanic.
We've maybe a whole week.
Yeah,
I've
has
spent
been dedicated.
Probably at least 3 days watching The Jinx.
Wow.
Hell yeah, dude.
I've seen it like I think 10 times. All the way through, top to bottom. No bathroom breaks. No bathroom breaks till he's innocent.
Do you?
I am on a piss strike. I am announcing it now on this podcast.
2 years.
Hey, here's a question. In The Big Lebowski, whenever the dude meets Jackie Treehorn,
mm-hmm.
is that, I wonder if that's a vague allusion to.
Well, Jack Horner, isn't that
Jack
like
Horner.
A nursery rhyme? Little Jack
Well, yeah,
Horner
I mean, that's a
something.
Fake name.
Jack Horner, yeah.
Yeah, they all chose like porn yeah. names for themselves. I should have chosen a porn scout name for myself.
Oh yeah.
Actually, I had one.
What was it?
What?
Because my boss
repressed memory.
My boss made me business cards to hand out that I never did. I never handed a single one out to anyone.
Oh really? Why?
You should start handing them out now.
Yep.
I might still have them.
Oh, just, my God. I want one.
But sex, Caitlin.
I kept my first name, but my last name was Kelly. Caitlin Kelly.
With three
I'm
eyes.
I'm so horny right now. That's a great name.
I thought you were going to say your name was like Sex Xena.
Oh, that would have been good.
Fuck guy.
Horsewoman. That's me.
Caitlin the Hog.
Kill him, big old Hog Kelly.
Hogs out.
Hogs out, Kelly.
Grow up, Hogs out, Kelly.
let's do our general tests. Aristotle, if we forget any. Steampunk imagery in this movie, I'm happy to report, very low.
Yeah.
Is there any steampunk imagery that
Not that I noticed.
Not a rogue gear.
And there's two magicians in the movie.
There's two magicians, and yet they suck. And so steampunk culture is not glorified. I'd like to point out that Josh Androsky is currently vaping.
What's that?
What
he's got
the
smell of vision,
alive.
Dude. It smells like fucking coffee. It smells like breakfast in here, baby.
What else? There's no bald women in this movie, so
no.
We can't apply our bald woman test. What else is
we
there?
We did mention Titanic already.
We did mention Titanic. We said grow up. Did we say I'm triggered? If not, I'm triggered.
I've said it a couple times.
You okay, you've been triggered quite a bit.
Yeah.
In this,
this is a very triggering
I've never
episode.
Been, I've never... What?
Women in STEM.
There's no women in STEM in this
movie. You know
movie.
What?
It doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
Wait, no, doesn't it? Because she did her GED.
I was going to say,
that's not STEM.
I wish that Roller Girl had had a more defined desire. She wanted to go back and get her GED to specifically go on to be a woman in STEM.
Hold
She's
on.
Like,
I
want to
be a woman in STEM.
Hold on. Julianne Moore explains the process in which a chemical enters your body, cocaine, to Marky Mark the first time he does it, which is chemistry.
That ain't STEM, baby.
There's also a lot of chemistry in this movie.
That ain't STEM, baby. Show me Julianne Moore
the chemistry,
and Heather Graham in a lab.
The chemistry between Julianne Moore and Mark Wahlberg during that first sex scene when she says to come in her.
Oh, like romantic chemistry.
Hey, who's having fun? Who's having fun?
A little funny.
Who's having fun?
Okay. Josh was doing a funny we didn't realize.
What do we got?
What's up?
Degrees.
Oh! How many degrees do you have?
I have 2 degrees. I mentioned one of them already, a film degree from Penn State.
God, you just can't stop.
I can't. And then I have a second, a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University.
I still just got my one in radio broadcasting.
I dropped out of high school, much like Roller Girl. Mm. I'm the Roller Girl of the Los Angeles East Side alternative
Whoa.
Comedy scene.
I kept wanting to, like, be able to draw parallels from, like, the porn industry to, like, the comedy community.
It's very similar.
I think so.
You're listening to 88.9. This is... Oh, I forgot. In the other episode where I did my R&B late night radio show voice, I gave the wrong name to the show. And the actual name of the show is way better. It's You're Listening to The Secret Spot.
Oh, no. Ooh. That sounds like a Luis Guzman club name.
The Rodriguez brothers?
It's supposed to be a G.
And all he just wants to be in one of the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He wants to be fucking a lady, which he doesn't get to do. But they
he wants his brothers
cameo.
To see him fucking a lady.
No, but his brothers get to see him betraying Chess Rockwell and Reed Roth. Chess Rockwell and what was Dirk Diggler's fake name?
Brock
Landers.
Yeah.
And then he gets punched and falls way too early.
One of my favorite jokes in the movie is they're going shopping with the money that, like, Dirk Diggler now has from, like, being a star. And they have a pair of shoes, and someone goes, oh, are they lizard? And he goes, no, they're Italian. Loved it. My other favorite thing is Jessie St. Vincent in her oil paintings and how so bad they are.
Oh,
very bad.
But that's another thing where it's like that she very quietly has an ambition and doesn't talk about it. She doesn't externalize
it
like the men do. And then also, what's her name that Don Cheadle was with?
Becky Barnett.
Becky Barnett also just like gets out of the industry, marries a man that she clearly liked more than Don Cheadle.
Right. He worked at Pet Boys.
Yeah, he was in the auto industry.
Right.
They moved to Bakersfield, and she got married, and she was super happy, and she was totally... She seemed like the most well-adjusted one out of all of them, and got the fuck out and was super quiet about it. And so I think there is definitely something to the idea of the men just so externalizing their desires and the women internalizing them more. But I think she, out of everybody, because everybody else's success comes at hitting a real bottom.
Right.
And as the movie has it,
She transitions. Becky Barnett. Out.
She gets out. She gets a family. She's living in Bakersfield with her husband, who's got a nice job for that. You know, for like the early 80s. Like,
middle management, baby.
Yeah.
Bring it. Yeah, that is interesting. I kind of forgot about Becky.
Well, she gets very little screen time. She and Jesse St. Vincent don't have a ton of screen time.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I kind of forgot about that. And it's funny because I think it would be sort of like an easy gag to be like, oh, and Jesse St. Vincent sucks at painting. But no one in this movie is very good at anything, regardless of gender. Everyone's kind of fucking mediocre and just scraping by. Like, you know, Amber's documentary is not good. John C. Reilly is not good at poetry or magic.
Right.
Like, everyone's sort of fucking...
Dirk is a horrible singer.
He's a... Yeah. And that's kind of sad. Like, all of their ambitions with... I don't know. I don't know if I can think of an exception. Jack Horner's movies suck.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
They suck.
They're not good. And I mean, sure, like low-budget porn movies aren't going to be
But I mean, those
good.
Are high-budget for
but
the
he,
time.
Oh, sure. And then he kept saying, like, I want to make films. I want
drama.
People to sit and watch and stew in their own cum. Just because they're so engaged with the story.
Well, I think the thing is that, and this gets to another reason why I really like this movie, is that it portrays sex workers as just people.
Mm-hmm.
These people are they're not great, they're not bad, like they're somewhere in between. They're just human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Even like the new trailer where, like, it's, like, the so-called feminist movie where they, like, accidentally kill a stripper, you know? It's like, fuck you. Like, yeah, like, this movie's portrayal of sex work as, like, an honest thing that just people do and then leave or then go back to or whatever. It's the same as anything. It's the same as any people. And I think that is a really underplayed part of the movie, is that just how fucking real all these people are. And they also happen to be sex workers.
Right.
Yeah. I'm on board. Co-signed. You know what? I would like to take credit for all that. I like to co-sign, but now it's mine.
Yeah. Well, when you agree to do this podcast, if you give any like cool and good opinions, they actually become ours. That's just
that's
part
fine.
Of the...
That's a contract.
You should have read the fine print of the contract.
Or listen to the podcast once before I did it.
I'm going to flip the table. That's really all I ever want to do in my whole life. If I flipped a table today, I could die tomorrow and be totally fine.
Well, you got to wait to flip that table. It's got to be the perfect table. Because if you waste it on this,
it's
barely a table, folks.
Here's how I think this is going to go. I'm going to live to be 94 years old, be on my deathbed, and my great-great-grandchild be like, hey, you.
Moo-moo.
Did you ever flip that table? And I'll look at my tattoo, which reminds me to do it. And I'll say, no, I never did. And she'll set up a table. And then I'll almost flip it, but I'll die in the middle.
Here's how it should happen. So you're on a boat. You're very old.
I'm going to die on a boat?
Listen.
Oh, Titanic.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So you're going to be like, I've told my story about always wanting to flip a table. And then you're going
to
flip
Bill
a table
Paxton,
over the edge of a boat, and it's going to sink down into the water. And then you're going to go to sleep that night and die and then go to heaven. And you're going to see.
Don't even start with the heaven scene. I like tears jumped to my eyes. Just
wait. In Titanic, do they go to heaven?
Yes.
Titanic ends in heaven.
They go to heaven.
I'm sorry. I haven't seen the movie a lot.
I still think it's a dream.
They go to heaven. It's not a dream. It's real life. And it's so sad because they walk in and you're like, it's all the C characters. And then...
Oh, they got to hang out here too?
And then they're all there. Fabrizio.
No, that's not the version of heaven.
Bitch. There's a lot of parallel heavens. I don't understand why that would be.
Hold on. You can't just zoom right by that. There's a lot of parallel heavens. Oh, we're all aware of that. What?
Also, why would
everyone has their own?
Why would heaven be the place
that's Mormonism.
Where you died?
No.
All those people died on the ship. Why would their version of heaven be like, oh, you remember the ship that killed me?
I'm going to start
this
crying.
So Jesus is just on the cross in heaven, just hopping around on like the bottom
that's
of the cross?
That's not his heaven.
But what if it's mine?
Then that's what he's doing.
Well, then where is he? He has to know a little bit in his heaven that he's doing that in mine.
It's parallel Jesus.
What if heaven is like you get plugged into the Matrix or like whatever Matrix program you want, and then you're like, this is how I just...
Don't make this into sci-fi. I'm having fun with my heaven. My heaven would be... You know what my heaven would be?
Yeah.
That last scene in Titanic. Except I am Fabrizio's girlfriend. That's what it was.
So you're even a minor character in your own heaven.
Ah, fuck yeah. It's like at the beginning, I cast myself. I only have 45 seconds of screen time in my own movie.
Wow. Mm-hmm. It's round. We're going in circles just like we're on wheels.
Man, my blood pressure. My blood pressure is insane right now.
Why? Did you bleed a lot or something?
No. I feel like my blood's about to burst out of my body.
Oh, yeah. That would be weird.
I have all my orifices. Yeah.
There's a surprising amount.
We decided bleeding.
Yeah.
There's a surprising amount of murder in...
There's a lot of blood.
There's a lot of blood.
A lot of blood for people's heads and mouths.
And what, in Titanic?
No.
No, they cut that all out.
I was like, can we talk about Titanic now?
Oh. No, remember when they used the necklace to strangle all those people?
Well, there's murder in both movies. There's we can murder. Wait, you know what? I'd love to keep talking about Titanic.
I would not.
What
I
just this thought episode's about.
I just thought about Boogie Nights. I'm like, I'm bored. I want to talk about Titanic.
Boogie Nights is so good.
Does anyone have any thoughts?
It's not Titanic some, good. There's not heaven in it.
Yeah, there is heaven in it. There's heaven in Boogie Nights.
Where?
Heaven in Boogie Nights is the fucking when they all are dancing together and they all have a group dance routine on the disco.
That's a metaphor.
Yeah, for heaven.
Yeah, everything's but not
great,
real heaven.
And we're never going to die.
Titanic.
That's heaven.
Titanic's real heaven. And then
wait.
You take his hand and then it pans up and hey, it's the captain. End of movie.
I'm triggered. Can we talk about the scene where Dirk Diggler pulls out the
Hogs
huge
out.
Dick.
Hogs out.
That
Hogs
they've been out, talking baby. About. First of all, I like that
Hogs
this movie
out.
Is basically an extended objectification Hogs. Of a man based on his dick size.
Yep.
He's just treated mostly as a commodity. They're like, we're going to make money off you because you're a huge dick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this movie's about.
And you're too stupid. Like, his mom's just like, you're too stupid to know anything.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be something.
Oh, that, yeah, that another hard scene to watch.
Yeah, especially because he almost fucked his mom.
Again,
God,
I don't.
I would have forgiven everything if they had just give me a little kiss.
Oh.
What if he was like, Mom, give me a little kiss.
He's like, Mom.
I do
mom.
Not endorse this.
Mom!
Okay.
Give me a little kiss!
I want to kiss my own mom.
Let's talk about the scene where he pulls his dick out.
In front of his mom. Hog Moms coming soon to TBS. Very
wait,
funny.
Is that why?
Hog Moms.
I'm going to pass out. I need more oxygen. Okay. Old hogs.
Aristotle yep. just left because he can't handle.
I bet he's doing.
He's jerking
an
off.
An Aristotle poop break.
No, he's jerking off.
We haven't had one of those in months.
We haven't, no.
He's jerking off and someone's paying him $10, but he'll be thinking about a hog mom.
Wait, oh, okay, so this is what I was thinking about hogs. Okay.
Old hogs. Wild hogs.
Is that like a hogs reference?
I mean, look, what isn't?
But is it?
I've never seen wild
like,
hogs.
Old,
but I assume.
It's like about motorcycles, but it's like also like old dicks.
Well, no, so you're confusing old dogs.
Dicks.
You're confusing about. Old dogs with wild hogs, which I totally understand. But they are two very different movies.
Isn't there old hogs?
No, that is a genre. That is just a genre. That's not a movie.
That's AARP pornography.
If you go, yeah, if there is a. I purchased Whippets last night at the exotic boutique right by my house. There is an entire section of pornography that is like one of the titles was Oops, I Fucked Your Grandma.
Where do you get Whippets?
At the porn place. I do want everyone to know that I am the Whippet comedian. God damn it. I'm going to be the Doug Benson of Whippets.
I didn't know how many.
I'm going to do all my shows at 3:11, which is the time to vape and do whips.
Getting whipped with it.
Your theme song can be Getting Whippy With It.
Yeah!
There is literally a song called Whip It. There is 100% already song called Whip It.
No.
You don't need to do any work for it.
You got to write a different song.
Oh, boy.
Getting Whippy With It.
Wow. That's so much extra. All right, deal.
You can hire out the person who wrote the Bechdelcast theme song to write.
Who's that?
Mike Kaplan wrote the lyrics.
Okay.
We were like.
She's vaping again. I can see it in my peripherals and I'm going to scream.
It's 3:11.
Okay. You know what? Turns out there is steampunk culture in the room.
What are you talking about?
With Josh's weird chrome steampunk vape.
Look, it's either this
like
or I die from
feet.
Cigarettes.
It's like as long as a bugle. It's ridiculous.
If I push one of the buttons, a little flag unfurls that says, bang, you got vaped.
he keeps blowing out smoke clouds.
It's not smoke, it's vape.
He keeps vaping little cogs out of his mouth and suede vests. I hate it.
Hey, does anyone have any final thoughts about the movie?
I like it.
very poignant.
Do you
Thank
talk
you
about
for your
how it passes the Bechdel test?
Oh, yes.
Because
so,
it does.
It does. A couple different times. Like, I was pleasantly surprised.
And then the first 5 minutes it does.
With the, I gotta pee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Roller Girl rolls up to Amber at the table and Amber's like, hey, did you call that girl? You gotta get that checked out. If you don't call tomorrow, you won't be able to get to see her.
Yeah.
Presumably she has a UTI or an STI or something.
Right.
She resonated with me.
Up.
I was like, imagine someone, you know, like if you have a UTI and someone tries to talk to you and you're like, huh? Like there's someone tries to dance with her. She's like, I gotta go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm on fire.
Then it happens again. There's a montage where we see a few different scenes between Amber and Roller Girl again. They're doing a bunch of coke.
Yeah.
Roller Girl's like, let's take a pottery class. I want to get my GED. It lasts for maybe 15 seconds and then it cuts back and then they are talking about Dirk for a minute. They're like, I miss him. But then she's like, be my mom. Will you say that you're my mom? And she's like, yes, honey, I'm your mom.
And that's arguably the most intense part of the entire movie. Like, I mean, it's a super intense movie at parts. But I mean, it's more intense than the violence. It's more intense than any of like the actual physical violence done. Is just the emotional violence of that scene. It's just they're so desperate and they need each other so much and this world has given them fucking nothing and they just have each other and it's like so intense.
Yeah.
I got a vape.
You gotta vape this one off.
I gotta go pull an Aristotle.
I want to talk about, just real quick, the romantic relationships or sort of lack thereof.
Mm-hmm.
And like, maybe Jack is like dating / with Roller Girl and Amber. We're not really sure. Like, no one's really together. Like,
right.
They're
right.
Fucking on screen, like on camera all the time. But no one like really has, except for like Don Cheadle and
Jesse
and St. Vincent. The people who like get together and then they pair off and then they basically leave the industry are
right.
Like really the only ones who are like managed to like sustain a like a solid romantic relationship. Everyone who stays in it, which like stands to reason. I mean,
right.
Imagine trying to sustain a relationship where you're just like, oh, but you gotta go fuck my friend for money.
Right.
But also like, it seems like Amber and Jack have an understanding. You know, they have a mutual respect.
Like almost like a Hefner-y kind of...
But not even... I wouldn't even say Hefner-y because Jack, for as fucking weird as he is... And correct me if I'm wrong. As a man watching it, Jack never came off like a creep. Like the Colonel or even the guy that was the dying guy in Magnolia. That was the videotape guy.
Oh, right,
like,
right, right.
All of them like were fucking creeps. But to me, Jack never seemed like a creep. He just seemed like he was like, I run a business and I know you're the type of people that would be in this business. You need me, I need you, and let's have an understanding.
Right. He didn't seem to exploit anyone more than necessary.
Well, more than they wanted to be exploited
right,
for a
exactly.
moment
yeah.
at least, you know? And then afterwards, like, he stopped. And the only true moment of exploitation you really saw at the hands of a woman with Jack was that limo scene. And Jack almost murdered the man afterwards that did it, you know? I feel like... It is obviously problematic, but, like, was an understanding.
We could speculate as to why. He only went after him after he said, oh, your movies suck now anyway. And that's what triggered him to go and, like, beat
Hashtag
the shit
trig.
Out of him. Hashtag
trig,
triggered.
Trig.
And then it was Roller Girl who's like, you disrespected me. And then she stomps on his face with her roller skates. Who knows if part of...
I mean, he was talking about, like, hey, this is a woman. Don't treat her like just
that's
a
true.
Hole, like, in the fucking, you know, limo. So, I mean, obviously, you could posit it that it was the slight to his own ego that made him do it. I could totally see that.
Mm-hmm.
But it just was interesting to me in a movie where it would have been so easy to paint people with such broad strokes. Paul Thomas Anderson did such a great job of like finely detailing.
The three names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack's character is interesting to me, like, because I don't think that he's a pervert either. But it's just like I feel like his whole narrative is just like this really sad, desperate search for integrity of mm-hmm. some sort.
Yeah.
And it seems like he treats every area of his life with that approach of like, I'm going to approach the people I work with integrity. I'm going to try to approach my own work with integrity. And none of it is great or works out well, but it's like I feel like
he always compromises it
when push comes to shove, but like wants to believe that he's this principled alpha boy.
There's a scene as everyone else is deteriorating and their lives are going to shit, his also sort of is, because first of all he had to like compromise and switch to video, which he didn't want to do. Yeah. And then he's directing a movie with
John
Jesse.
Doe or
that
whatever.
Little
yeah,
boy.
The Ugh. Little boy. And then
the Jesse Plemons of this movie.
And Jesse St. Vincent's like, is he going to fuck me in the ass? And he's like, I don't know. Do you want him to? And she's like, yeah, that'd be great. He's like, all right, fuck her in the ass. Like, yeah. he's kind of given up. He's like, well, I can't. You know, what is that?
This isn't directing.
Right.
This isn't the art I was making previously.
Drama.
Drama. Sit in your cum.
I do like the scene where whenever the Dirk comes back and's like, I need help. Can you help me? And he's just like, give me a hug, old pal. They make up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is, God, those characters are so weird. And I think that Julianne Moore's character is kind of this, like, people who, like, get off on being needed by the people around them. Like, I think that Amber and Jack are both like that in a way that I feel like in real life is so weird.
Codependent and poisonous.
Yeah, yeah, where they're like, you know, I know that you fucked up and I probably shouldn't forgive you, but I need to feel important, so I'm going to make this big show of forgiveness. And then you're just like, this is just going to fall to shit again for sure. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I mean, most of the people in the movie have pretty severe emotional baggage. I mean, like we said before, one of the reasons that Dirk leaves and like enters into this enterprise is because his mom like was horribly
is that where you were going?
I was gonna say horribly emotionally
horny.
She was very emotionally
horny
and verbally abusive. Okay,
she wanted
grow
Cuck
up.
Daddy to watch her and Marky Mark kiss.
Yeah.
Hey, Cuck Daddy, come check this out.
Oh, I have to? Oh man,
it's like, I'm just a Cuck Daddy. I'm Cuck just... 2, directed by Joel and Ethan.
But I'm the so Joel triggered. Cohen that made Garfield.
We're gonna make Caitlin kill herself. I'm gonna flip a table.
Yeah,
his mom was very emotionally and verbally abusive, and you know he had a
wouldn't
horrible
even kiss
home
him once.
So he had to leave, and so like I mean we don't know a lot of other people's backstories or any really, but we can kind of imagine that they all have a lot of emotional baggage that
except Cosmo, the Chinese boy who throws fireworks. Who is the true hero of the tale?
Oh man, that scene is oh god, it's just one hard scene to watch after another.
That scene is not hard to watch.
Yes, it is.
That scene is the easiest scene to watch. That scene is such a payoff after so much brutal fucking awful shit. It's just funny.
It's funny, but it, I mean, with the firecrackers going off,
oh yeah,
it's so startling.
Yeah, no, that's
true. And I love how they're so jumpy. It's just the most tense.
Yeah.
Scene.
It is literally hard to watch in that it there's booms and bangs throughout it, but it's not hard to watch like emotionally.
Sure, no, yeah, exactly. But
yeah,
oh, man,
oh, that seems so funny. And Tom Jane, what a performance by Tom Jane!
Who's that?
Tom Jane, the
dancer, the stripper.
Yeah,
dancer.
The stripper who comes in and ruins the heist at the end. Who's Reed's friend? But yeah, Tom Jane fucking kills it as the Chippendales dancer turned coke addict, turned guy who introduces them all to crystal meth. And I love watching his car, like as soon as Tom Jane introduces them to crystal meth, then you just the next time you see Dirk Diggler's car, it looks like absolute shit. Like throughout all the coke, his car looked fine. But then the minute he was like, because that was also the first time that he was a dick to Roller Girl, was when Tom Jane was like, careful to only do bumps. This is crystal. And fucking Dirk Diggler's like, I don't fucking like he just takes a whole rail. And then Roller Girl comes in. She's like, how are you? And he's like, Yeah, whatever.
I was impressed with how long Dirk Diggler is decent to people in this movie. He gets pretty far. Like, peak Philip Seymour Hoffman, like, I'm such a dummy, but I'm so horny. That's every Philip Seymour Hoffman character ever. But Marky Mark handles it rather well. And he's like, no, but I love you and you're my friend.
Scotty. Yeah. We'll be friends. Yeah. Scotty.
And then he leaves and it's like, oh, what a sweet little buff teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was such a sweet teen meat.
He was.
Sweet teen beef. Sweet teen beef. Sweet teen beef.
Hey, kiss your all mom. Our sweet teen beef daddies out there.
Hubba hubba.
Vroom, vroom. Hogs out. Hogs out, baby.
Hogs out, sweet teens.
Of consenting ages, of course. If you're of consenting age, whip out that hog. That's why I say in public at night. Whoa, my phone just buzzed and said, time for bed. Look, it said time for bed.
Yeah, can confirm.
Go to bed, 4 p.m.
Why did it do that?
I don't know.
You got to go to sleep now. You talk too much about teen beef.
Time for bed, time for bed.
Well, guys. Does anyone have anything else they want to say about the movie?
Oh, we said that 20 minutes ago. Alfred Molina steals the scene.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. What a- the one scene, the only scene that mattered. If that movie was just that scene, I'd love it just as much.
I would like to draw out the comparison of Alfred Molina's scene stealer in Boogie Nights to Christopher Walken's scene stealer in Geely. Which is another movie we've done on the cast that that Caitlin gets upset just thinking about.
I'm furious right now.
Geely.
You're making me vape. You're driving me to vape with this Geely talk.
I'm sorry. It's a really good scene. Christopher Walken clearly has food he brought from craft services and has it in the scene the whole time.
Right.
We could hear you vaping. Oh, my God.
I'm trying to do it as audibly as possible because I do not care at all about this story.
What a loud vape.
I'm the Pete Holmes of vaping.
Should we rate the movie?
Yes.
Okay.
What's your scale?
Oh, 0 to 5 nipples.
Nipples.
And nipples being great.
5 nipples is the highest score.
Nipples are good.
Well, duh.
You got to describe them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you guys go first, or do you want me to go first?
You go last.
Because you're a man. Put your muzzle back on and
ooh,
shut
I just
up
got
for,
mad
a minute.
For a second. But now I'm okay. Oh, no. He's vaping too much.
He's out of control.
He's in the mainframe. He vaped too hard.
I hacked in.
He hacked into the mainframe with his
digital
vape. I
see everything. Numbers are color.
How many nipples would you give it, though?
man, again, I this movie is...
It's a hard one.
That's right.
It's a little Muppet noise.
I mean, I guess 3.5.
It's so
again,
hard.
It's a movie about people working in porn, which, again, is an industry that... revolves almost entirely around objectifying people. Although, I think there are maybe some recent developments in the porn industry where people are kind of like taking back power and like, this is porn for women and by women and it's not so horrible.
Yeah, because it's everyone's going to come all the time.
Right.
You're never going to stop people from coming. You could just stop the people from getting hurt to make other people come.
Please stop reading my uncle's tombstone podcast. Incredibly triggering. Unbelievable.
I guess.
R.I.P. Uncle Louie, we miss you.
Hey, this is me, Uncle Louie.
I'm hell.
Hey, I'm down here in hell. Let me tell you, I'm getting my hog ripped off every day. It's a dream come true.
Wait, he's getting his hog ripped off?
Oh, it's so good. Who knew? Who knew this is what made it?
There's so many different versions of heaven, you know? Right? Your Uncle Louie is getting his dick ripped off every day.
Hey, he should call that the doctor who gave birth to you twice because he did a penis transplant.
Oh, we should add that to the list.
What?
Was I born in May or August? We don't know.
How many nipples?
Okay, I'd say like 3.5. Again, good points were made, but I still wanted to see women have... I just wanted to see them be more ambitious or have like more clearly defined... desires that were a bit more cathartic because we see like the men be like, I got my stereo store now, or I'm a performing magician, and then like the women are just like, well, I kind of I don't really do anything. But for a movie that could have treated the female characters in it very poorly, mm-hmm. it didn't. And it even addressed like violence towards women in porn. So I think overall it did a pretty good job. But I still have some complaints about it.
Hell yeah.
Some notes.
Some complaints.
Some notes.
I'm going to give it 3.5 as well. I think that's good. For all the reasons you said, and also there are some scenes where it's like, we're using naked ladies as set dressing in this scene, maybe a little bit. Mm-hmm.
They also linger on Roller Girl roller skating around, like pretty much looking
headless
at her
women
butt.
In Hollywood style. Yeah. Lots of ass
we
shots.
See that a bunch.
Yeah, that's true. So I'll give it 3.5 as well. I'm gonna give two nipples, two hard. Troubled nipples to cuck daddy and give one leaky faucet nipple to horny mommy and give a half nipple to the pervert who got beat up in jail.
This is a 5 nip. This is a 525,600 nipples. This is a 5 nipper for me.
Okay. Defend yourself.
Yeah, defend your nip choice.
I mean, it's my favorite movie. It takes a subject that is, I mean, this was 1997, like 8 heads in a duffel bag and like, you know, whatever, like those, like, let's go kill a stripper. Like there was nothing at all about the adult industry that treated any of them like the human beings that they are. Mm-hmm. And it also was like the soundtrack was phenomenal. The movie was just like, I just thought that the most complex characters in the movie were the most complex character in the movie to me was Amber. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody else was pretty straightforward. And Julianne Moore's performance as Amber, like I fell in love with when I was 15 years old. Like I wanted her to be my horny mommy. Mm-hmm. And I just like couldn't handle it. It's like her performance. I think it's one of the most like emotionally complex and like she's so much more developed than every other man. Every man, because their wants and needs are so distinct and often so external.
Quite delusional.
Also, 100% delusional. She just seems, I don't know, she's the anchor of that movie. She's mm-hmm. the glue of the movie. She's the jizz that glues the pages shut in the script of that movie. Mm. I love her. And I also like watching Roller Girl stomp the shit out of that fucking asshole.
That ruled,
ruled. I don't know. I mean, I totally understand your 3.5 nips. And as a boy toy, as Oopsie Otter, I am allowing myself the privilege to not get triggered.
Priv.
I'm using my priv. And everybody's just themselves and, like, going through everybody, male and female, are just constantly playing with their looks. Like, that's a super underrated part of the movie, is that constantly everybody's playing with their look. And Don Cheadle's, like...
Dude, Don Cheadle's
when he shows up as Rick James for some... And then he finally takes off that stupid wig and just gets honest.
Yeah.
And then they fall in love.
They talk about sunrises. Yeah. How they're better than sunsets.
Yeah.
It's, like, the cutest thing. And then they have a baby and they are actually in love.
Yeah,
I loved it. I thought it was super uplifting, and again, the score is amazing.
Dummies fall in love.
Yeah,
and
stupid people.
That was like the best scene of like, you like the sunset? I like the sunset.
But,
oh my god!
But sunrise is
but
better.
But sunrise is good. Oh yeah, I feel the same way.
I thought
about
I was
thing.
The only.
Yeah, it was nice. I was like, yeah. Oh.
My other favorite moment from the movie is when I think it's William H. Macy is talking to, I want to say like the DP or something
Ricky
like
J.
that. And they're talking about the movie that they're supposed to shoot in a couple days. And they're like, well, is there even a script? And they're like, I don't know. Like, they clearly just make up the scenes as they go. Story doesn't matter. And they're just fine with it.
Well, there's a line that I also, like, whenever I make a thing, like, my friends and I make a thing, we always say, like, when we're lighting and there's shadows in life, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, this, that, just like, yeah, why are we going to light this? It's, there's shadows in life. Right. Like, that's like a production mentality. There's shadows in life.
Yeah.
That's the name of my new emo band.
All right.
There's shadows in life.
I like Sweet Teen Beef as my like fucking vroom vroom motorcycle music.
Oh, man.
I was getting rubbed. Everybody's just getting rubbed. Oh. Genderless rub. Non-binary rub. Sweet Teen Beef.
Oh, yeah, you just have to tag it with the name.
So my nips belong to Cosmo. Two of them belong to Cosmo, the Chinese. Cause those are firecracker nips. He's also wearing a Rick Springfield shirt while Jesse's Girl plays. They love Jesse's Girl. Two of my nips have to go to Julianne Moore's Perfect Pink Nips, as that you've
they
mentioned.
They are perfect.
So I got 1.5 more nips. One of those nips is the one that's poking out of Scotty's tank top when his arms are crossed. And the half nip, that's my man, Luis
Guzman.
Wait,
are you giving the movie 5.5 nipples?
Yep, 5.5 nips. Okay. Because Luis Guzman puts it over the top.
You can't deny those nips.
Nah.
No. You can't deny those Guzman nips.
Great. I feel good about all of our choices here today.
We did it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you so much.
Hey, where can people find you online?
You can find me at twitter.com/ help me. Oh, at Shut Up Androsky.
Cool.
Yeah, you're going to read it. You're looking at it.
Fans want to know, where'd you get that horrible vape?
Burbank, California.
Awesome. Let's burn it down.
I run a show here at Nerd Melt every month called Reunited. Mm-hmm. That's fun and good. And the next one's April 9th. Question mark?
Why should I know? I'm just the program director.
And I'm just the person who
hasn't no dog in this fight.
Put any work into it yet. I think it's in 2 weeks.
Sounds I'm a wild card. I don't care.
Yeah, come. It's me and Brian Cook, and we make fun of stuff from TV, and we've had Greg Proops, and also so many people that are good. Karen Kilgariff played a ghost once. It was great.
Ooh, that rules. Mm.
Hey, Jamie, do you want to plug anything?
No. Your new band.
No.
Your new band, Sweet
Teen Beef. My new band. No Shadows in the Desert. What was it called?
Shadows in Life.
I exhaust myself. You don't need to pay attention to me this week.
You can check out my new hit single, Getting Whippy With It.
And you also made me laugh vape out. Ooh, vape out.
I'm going to bury you alive.
Hell yeah, dude. I'm down. Let's go to the beach. Yeah.
All right. Beach time.
You can also follow the podcast on Twitter at Bechtelcast, and you can rate and review us.
Hey, we got more reviews.
We got more reviews, all positive. Thanks, nice. Guys, for reviewing us. We really appreciate
it. No haters.
And everyone, and just, you know, support movies that feature women and that treat women well.
And treat the women in your life well.
Yeah.
If your horny mommy says, give me a little kiss, give horny mommy a little kiss.
Nope, okay, bye.
Give mommy a kiss.
All right, bye.